From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Pons. On Target is a new podcast of the Gettysburgian, syndicated on WZBT and available online around the world. Today on Target, we'll take a look at the construction projects that are underway all over campus. We'll talk about where things stand and about the fire at the College Union Building this summer.
Then, the unauthorized recording policy has left a lot of people scratching their heads. We'll break it down and discuss the implications. President Janet Morgan Riggs is our featured guest. Stay with us.
Welcome to the Gettysburgian's new and exciting podcast, On Target. As we said in the opening, I'm Ben Ponce. I'm the managing news editor of the Gettysburgian.
And I'm Jamie Welch. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Gettysburgian and the news director at WZBT.
So I figured we probably should start with a little background on how the podcast came to be. Last spring, Jamie and I were privileged to attend a journalism conference for student journalists held at the New York Times. And at that conference, or whatever you want to call it, there was a segment about podcasting, and we kind of looked at each other and on the train ride back started outlining this podcast. And, you know, we're really excited that it's come to fruition, and we're super excited that Janet Morgan Riggs, our college president, agreed to be our first guest. I seem to recall last spring shooting her an email asking if she'd do it, and she responded within like an hour with a couple exclamation points. So I think that was a real impetus forward for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're really excited about this new joint venture between the Gettysburgian and WZBT. We've sort of, had a quasi-relationship in the past, but it's really great to have a brand new venture for both of us. And I know having President Riggs here is really special, and we're very happy that she was able to join us today.
Indeed. So do we want to, you know, share a little bit more information about ourselves? You want to start, Jamie?
Yeah, so in addition to working with WZBT and the Gettysburgian, I serve with the Office of Residential and First Year Programs as an upper-class community advisor. I work with the Student Outreach Program as a development coordinator, and I also work with the Campus Activities Board as the late-night coordinator, so I coordinate all those midnight madnesses everyone loves so much.
Love me some mid-mad. Yeah, and I am, again, Ben Ponce. I am a political science and public policy double major with a music minor. I'm a sophomore. Aside from the Gettysburgian, geez, what else do? I am a peer research mentor in the library. I'm a research assistant in the political science department. I play in the Gettysburg College Wind Symphony, the Bullets Marching Band. I get my way around campus. I do a lot of work here for the Gettysburgian. And I should note that I am appearing on an Experience Gettysburg panel during orientation that is happening Saturday. We're recording this Friday. And we are plugging, and they don't know about this yet, but we are plugging this podcast in my speech at that thing. So to any of you first years who ran home and tuned in to the Gettysburgian's new podcast, On Target, thank you.
Absolutely.
Nothing like a late drop into a speech.
Absolutely. Just come in there last minute, swoop in with some changes. I'm sure they love it.
I'm positive. All right. Well, without any more chitter chatter, let's get to the news. So this summer, you, Jamie, were on campus. I was not. I was home all the way over in Lancaster County.
So far away.
A world away, you might say. and I was working up in Harrisburg, and I remember one afternoon, I got about three emergency text messages, a phone call, and an email, all in the course of 5 minutes, telling me that Gettysburg College was on fire.
Pretty much. I was in Servo eating lunch, and I walked outside, and there was smoke billowing from the College Union Building. And at first, I didn't know whether the building itself was on fire or if it was just at the construction site. But it was a lot of smoke, and you could see flames. It was something else. There were so many fire departments that responded. I think it ended up being, what was it, like 15 different fire companies? It was just unbelievable.
It was quite a response for what, in the aftermath, seems to have not been a huge deal in terms of, well, I shouldn't say it wasn't a huge deal, but there wasn't any real structural damage to the Cub, or, you know, ultimately, I think we, you know, dodged a bullet, no pun intended.
You know, I mean, I would definitely say so, because, and I think it's thanks to the quick response of the Gettysburg Volunteer Fire Department. They were on scene very quickly and were there fighting the flames, trying to put out the fire, because it could have very easily spread from the construction site to the main building. And if that had happened, it really would have been a devastating loss for the college.
Indeed, especially in the midst of construction. And that is a nice segue in to talk about the construction. We're talking about burning things down. Now let's talk about building them up. So this summer, construction has begun on the plan to renovate the College Union building, as well as several other projects on campus. But let's start with the Cub. So, Jamie, why don't you walk us through what the plan is, what the timeline is, and where we are today?
So the plan is to build on a new addition onto the end of the Cub that will house a new office for the Student Activities Office. CAB will have offices up there. Student Senate, the Center for Career Development will be moving into the space. There'll be a brand new space for the Bullet Hole and the Junction. It's really going to be a fantastic new space, and they are currently working on demolishing the old Cub where the pool was, the pool and the old Bullet Hole area, to be able to build up this new space, which will also have a terrace outside. There's renderings on the Gettysburgian website, gettysburgian.com/cub. They're really fantastic.
Nice shameless plug there.
Absolutely. Got to have the shameless plug. But yeah, so it's really exciting, these new renovations. So in the Cub, they're expecting to have it done by fall 2018. So this upcoming fall. I don't know if that's actually going to happen. It seems like they're a bit behind personally right now, but the new temporary bullet hole looked like it wasn't going to be done, and suddenly one day it was just done. I mean, it was unbelievable. So I guess anything is possible.
Yeah, and we can ask President Riggs about that later on in the show to get her, maybe an update on the timeline. And you brought up the new bullet hole, and I would just like to throw it out there. We are recording this on Friday. We just came from the new bullet hole, and it was my first time being in there. It is a very impressive space. Lots more seating than there used to be. Much more open. There's natural light. I am very impressed with the bullet hole.
Yeah, I've heard it described as sort of, you know, the old bullet hole was good. The new temporary bullet hole is better. And then the best bullet hole is going to be in the final Cub edition. So this bullet hole is excellent. They have a bunch of new recipes. They're trying out new things. So it's really exciting. One thing to note that I'm a little upset about with the new bullet hole is that they will not be grilling items to order anymore. So on the hotline, there is no grill. So the hamburgers and grilled chicken will all be like in warmers, and they will serve it to you from there. So they won't be grilling items to order anymore because the grill's in the back.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I understand where you're coming from there. Although I will say last year, several times, you know, when you went to order something from the grill, it would take quite a while to get it. So if this expedites the process, I might be okay with that. I should also say, we should also mention that the salad station from Ike's has moved in to the new bullet hole, which
absolutely, yeah, the Ike's salad station will be available daily from the start of lunch service through 7 p.m. So people used to only be able to get Ike's for dinner on, I think, Tuesdays. But now you'll be able to get it every day until 7 p.m.
And we should note that upper class meal plans start on Saturday, which is tomorrow. But by the time you're listening to this, will be today, or they'll have already started. So your meal plans are good to go.
Yep, and they still take meals just like they used to at the new temporary bullet hole, and the hours are the same. You know, most of the things that you loved about the old bullet hole are still there.
Including Chicken Finger Friday, which was today. I just experienced it, and it's as good as ever. So no worries on the chicken fingers. A new place, but the same great taste. That almost rhymes.
You'll also notice that there's a bunch of fences up on campus. It's a little bit interesting navigating around as a consequence of this construction. We'll be talking to President Riggs a little bit later about some of that fencing. But it's just a little bit difficult to get around. If you want to get from, say, Masters or Plank to the Cub, you have to go all the way around out to Lincoln Avenue. You can't get in from the other side of the Cub into the building anymore.
Yeah, and I guess I also saw that the first year's field day during orientation will no longer be occurring on Stein Lake. It's on Memorial Field.
Yes, it's moved to Memorial Field because Stein Lake is currently largely grassless because it was dug up this summer for some steamline work. So this summer, the fencing was even worse. It was the fencing basically covered from Musselman Library all the way down to Gladfelter and out to Plank. It was impossible to get anywhere on campus without going a very circuitous route. So it's very nice that they've pared that back, because I was here over the summer and I very much appreciate. I know some people are upset about the new fencing, but this is much better than it was.
It's part of the Gettysburg Wellness Plan to make you walk more, get
there
your
you
steps
go. That's,
in.
That's right. It's in conjunction with the health center, I guess.
Well, that's why the health center's so far away. You have to be healthy and walk over there. I'm sure they planned it that way.
I'm pretty sure that they did, yeah.
All right, well, shall we move on to the unauthorized recording policy, which is new and I would say exciting, except I would say a better term might be a little bit irritating.
The Gettysburgian Editorial Board published a editorial slamming this new policy in this week's print edition of the Gettysburgian. It's also available online.
Basically, shameless plug number two.
We have lots of them. But basically, this new policy was created to try to protect students' rights to not be recorded in private spaces. And the college defines recording as audio recording, video recording, and photos. Those are all considered recording under the college's policy. But we, as the Gettysburgian Editorial Board, feel that the scope of this is way too broad.
Yeah, I think that's right. This seems to be a case of one of those situations where you have a well-intentioned group of people trying to address an issue, but they, you know, inadvertently created several other issues. I mean, we noted in the editorial that something like this makes it very hard for the Gettysburgian to function as we, you know, like it to, being able to take pictures at lectures that are occurring indoors. You know, I think it was a little bit curious that the college defined, you know, places where you have a right to policy as anywhere that's indoors. I mean, do you feel, Jamie, that you're in a private space when you walk into Servo or into the library?
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely don't. You know, if I'm sitting in the library, I'm out in the open. It's open to the public. Anybody can actually walk into the library. So I don't consider that to be a private space. You know, what I consider to be a private space is my own residence hall room. You know, a locker room, a restroom, those are truly private spaces. And, you know, what I think the college needs to do is just sort of go back to the drawing board and craft a policy that, you know, still accomplishes their goal while limiting the scope so that it's not so wide of a scope that it's almost unenforceable. Because right now, that's sort of what we're looking at with this policy.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And we'll be talking to President Riggs a little bit later on in the program about this as well.
We have a couple of intermediate segments we'd like to do now. First, the Bullet Report, where we'll be focusing on the Gettysburg College athletics. Not much has started yet, although teams are back on campus practicing. I know our sports editor, Elizabeth Hillfrank, is part of the women's cross-country team. And this weekend, in fact on Saturday, they are doing an alumni run that's happening on campus. The men's soccer team is hosting Penn State Harrisburg for a scrimmage. The women's soccer team is traveling to Wilkes for a scrimmage. And the field hockey team also has a scrimmage. Those scrimmages are at 10 and noon, respectively. 10, 10, and noon. The soccer is at 10. The field hockey is at noon. So those may have already happened by the time you're listening to this, but check it out. Season starts the following week. I believe the football team starts on the road. Their first home game, I want to say, is September 9th against Ursinus. So be sure to come on out for that. And our next segment is the Sounds of Sunderman segment, which was a recurring but perhaps not every edition segment featuring some music from an ensemble at the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. This week, the Bullets Marching Band, of which I am proudly a member of the baritone section. In any case, this week's segment is the Spirit of Gettysburg March from the Bullets Marching Band preview show, which happened earlier this week and which the Gettysburgian live streamed on Facebook. So be sure to check that out on Facebook. I know that's our third shameless plug of the day to go look at our content. But you'll have to forgive a little bit of the wind. It was a pretty windy day that day. So here is the Spirit of Gettysburg March, played by the Bullets Marching Band. Today, we have our very first interview guest, and that would be college president Janet Morgan Riggs. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to do that, Ben. I'm honored to be your first guest.
Yeah, so today, just for reference, we're recording on Friday, August the 25th, so orientation's been going on for a couple of days. We have some new first years on campus. You have any observations on the incoming class or what you've been up to during orientation?
Sure. I've got a great vibe, actually, from the class of 2021. I felt like move-in went beautifully. All of our volunteers were on hand. The first-year staff doing a tremendous job. All those students who organize all these events. Things have gone very smoothly. Nice weather, which always helps. But the class seems very engaged. I just came from the Give Day gathering as they were getting ready to start those activities, and there was a really positive vibe in the room. So happy to see that. It's always inspiring to have a new class arrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Give Day, the Gettysburg is Volunteering Day through the Center for Public Service. Today is, I believe, their 25th anniversary. We were prowling through the archives and found the 1992 edition of the Gettysburgian, where we found an article about the first Give Day. So,
you know, I didn't know that myself. I would have mentioned that in my remarks this morning had I known. That's a pretty amazing tradition.
So 25 years. And I was going to say to your point about the weather, it definitely seems a little cooler than it did last year when
I was
going through my own orientation experience.
All right, so we're going to get right into it here. You've long been a proponent of the freedom of expression, and you said that you've erred on the side of expression. Have recent events in Charlottesville changed that calculus for you? Looking back on the Robert Spencer situation, do you think you would have handled it the same way?
Gee, Jamie, I'm glad you asked me such an easy question to begin with, one that really has a simple answer. And yes, I'm just kidding. There's a lot of that in my voice. I hope you're all picking up. I do continue to think about this issue, and I'm sure many people on campus have been thinking about it a lot. And yes, I do value freedom of expression, and I think we have to value that on a college campus. You may remember last spring I mentioned that I thought it would be really good for us to continue our conversations on this topic coming into this year, and I expect we will do that. A lot of organizations on our campus had been talking about, a lot of groups had been talking about freedom of expression, what that means for us last spring, even in advance of the Robert Spencer lecture. And I think those conversations maybe helped prepare us a bit for that. But what my goal is for this fall is for us to have some conversations about an institutional philosophy relating to freedom of expression. We do have a statement right now, but it pretty much pertains, in the student handbook, pretty much pertains to outside speakers. I think we need a slightly broader philosophy from which our policies can flow. And I think everybody should have a voice in that conversation. We're not all going to agree exactly, but I'd really like to see the community engage in that conversation. Our Board of Trustees is also very interested in this topic, and they will be talking about this a bit at their October board meeting. So it really is a community-wide effort. My goal would be for us to be able to adopt a statement as an institution, and we haven't really laid out that process yet. We'll be doing that soon.
So last, I guess it was April or May, was when Robert Spencer, who was viewed by many as a controversial speaker, came to campus. Looking back at how the college dealt with that, with 2020 hindsight, would you do it again if that situation were to come up today?
I would. And there may be some on campus that are appalled by that statement, but I know there are others who think that was the right thing to do. I have great respect for the way this community responded to that event, and at all levels. I was so pleased that Jerome and other students put together that solidarity rally to go on at the same time as the Spencer Address went on. I thought that was a wonderful event. It's one I attended, and I think it created an alternative context. Those who went to the Spencer event, I think, were very respectful in their conversations with him, the questions they asked, and so on. We were very thoughtful in terms of planning and trying to keep out those who were not members of our campus, and I think that was a really important thing for us security-wise. It's not a normal practice, but I think it was the right thing in this case. And of course, we also had another speaker come to campus who presented a very different point of view. The Southern Poverty Law Center just put out some guidelines for how to approach controversial speakers, and I was just reading them this summer. And I was really pleased to see that a lot of what we did last spring actually adhered quite closely to those guidelines. I'm keeping those guidelines on my desk, by the way, because I'm sure we're going to have future events that are similar, and I think they'll provide the community with some guidance on these.
And you touched on this a minute ago, but just for anyone who may be listening who wasn't sure, last spring in an email, I guess it was, to the campus community, you said that my hope is that as a community, we will take the opportunity next fall to work towards an affirmative statement related to freedom of expression, a clear statement that defines what we are or are not willing to have said on our campus, a statement we can embrace and use to guide us when a similar issue confronts us in the future. Is there a process, or do you have any thoughts on how we might work towards such a statement?
Yeah, we have a group on campus called the Forward Thinking Group that consists of sort of a combination of our president's council, our senior administrative staff, and our faculty council, and actually also a member of our faculty finance committee. And that's a group that I pull together a few times a semester to talk about institutional issues and to get their guidance. And this is going to be our topic next Thursday when we meet for the first time in the semester to talk about a process to move this forward. Student Life Council certainly has been very involved in conversations about freedom of expression, and we would certainly want to engage that group. Well, I want to engage the student body in some way, whether that's through Student Senate, I don't know. As I said, the Board of Trustees is interested. I'm sure we will have a faculty meeting where we have some discussion about this, and probably also among some of our other constituent groups. The question is sort of, then who do you kind of appoint, I suppose, to draft a statement? So you want to collect a lot of input first, I think, and then draft a statement to put out for the entire community to look at and reflect on. And then at some point, I would imagine there might be a vote. And I think our Board of Trustees probably would want to weigh in on this, and certainly our faculty would as well.
Mm-hmm. And just one other, question in this particular vein. I've had numerous conversations relating on campus relating to the horrific incidents in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. And you put out a statement to the campus about that. And one thought that keeps coming to mind among many people, I think, is that Gettysburg in a lot of ways isn't that different from Charlottesville, in that we have, Confederate monuments in town and on the battlefield. And, I don't want to put you on the spot to weigh in on the monument controversy, but, do you think about whether something like that could happen in Gettysburg, how the college might handle something like that?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ben. And I do think we are a place that's sort of unnatural for discussion about these and maybe demonstrations and protests. quite frankly, I'm grateful that we don't have any statues, at least not that I'm aware of, on our campus that honor Confederate generals or others. But certainly on the battlefield, there are monuments to many. And I think it's a really interesting question. When you think about what a monument is there to do, some monuments are there to revere a person for their accomplishments, and other monuments are there to tell history. And so I think that has to be sort of in the middle of this conversation, particularly in Gettysburg. I know Professor Hancock has commented on this a bit, and I'd love to have a conversation with him about this. I haven't yet. I highly respect his opinion on these kinds of things. But I do think the national park's overall goal is to interpret history. And to the extent that those monuments are there to help them do that, it makes sense to me to have them. If there are monuments there that are really there to honor Confederates and their vision for the world and the continuation of slavery and so on, then that's kind of a different context. And so trying to parse that out, I think it's going to be complex.
So more broadly, with respect to freedom of expression, where do you draw the line? Incitement? Would a student wearing a t-shirt in which Donald Trump's head is exploding after a self-inflicted gunshot wound be something that you think a student has a right to wear? We've actually seen this on campus in the past week. It seems if the roles were reversed, that would be absolutely objectionable. So where do you stand on that?
Can you explain to me what you mean about if the roles were reversed?
If it weren't Donald Trump whose head was exploding on a t-shirt, it would seem that many people would probably have far more vehement objections than the student in question, and we won't, you know, name a name, but a student was wearing such a shirt. And it just, you know, made us pause and think, you know, is that, you know, we talk about there were many people with respect to Robert Spencer who said that it was incitement, and it would certainly seem mm-hmm. that a violent picture of someone shooting themselves would also conjure such images.
You know, that's a really interesting question. Honestly, I hadn't thought that we would have to have a conversation about what people are wearing. We're not a junior high school or a high school where those conversations usually take place. I'm not aware of any situation in which we have, unless, you know, someone was dressed indecently, I suppose, in which we have told a student what's allowable to wear. And I'm not sure we would want to go in that direction. Interesting question.
Jamie, do you want to talk about construction, switching gears a little bit?
Yeah, so we're going to switch to a more happy topic. So we have the construction, of course, that's ongoing on campus. Do you want to just share a little bit about sort of, you know, what's happening, what the end goal is here, and just give an update on how things are going?
And maybe a timeline.
Okay, happy to do that. For those of you who weren't here this summer, you missed the taking apart of the center of our campus. Most of it has been reconstructed, thankfully. Of course, the biggest project is the College Union building. During the summer, there was fencing that went all the way from Lincoln to the corner of McCreary and the Science Center. Lots of trenching done, lots of pipes moved, all that's been taken care of, fortunately, during the course of the summer. So for those of us who experienced this, the fenced-in area actually feels small relative to what we had. But for those of you who suddenly arrived on campus and see all this fencing, I guess it could be kind of startling. But what's happening there is we have almost completed the dismantling of the end of the College Union building where the old bullet hole and swimming pool were located. We have still a little bit of work to do there. And once that is complete, then we will begin the construction project. There's a beautiful rendering at the corner of the fence. I just noticed it that shows what the building will look like when it's completed. But we will be building it out so that we have a much nicer bullet hole facility and also room for the Garthwaite Leadership Center, Center for Career Development, which desperately needs better space than it currently has, given all of the student interest in traffic, and some student activities offices. This work will go on all year. We expect to open next August. So August of 2018 is the completion date for that project. In the meantime, We do have a temporary bullet hole now open on the west side of the dining hall, and I've heard some students report that they love it. We'll see how that works. I see this as sort of the intermediate level bullet hole. It's better than what we had, but it's not going to be as good as what we're going to have. But I think it will work well for us this year. We're very pleased with that new setup. The admissions project is ongoing, and we hope we'll finish up by early October, maybe late September, early October. There's some interior infrastructure work still to be done on the old side of the building, some HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning work to be done. But that will all finish up this fall, and that too is a good addition. In the meantime, you'll notice some other smaller scale projects going on. So across from Brewer Hall, you'll see some fencing around what used to be, back in the day, the old Phi Psi fraternity house. That is being remade into a new Office of Multicultural Engagement. We're very excited about that project. That's really responding to some student interest and needs. That will be a combined facility, combining offices, some social space, and some residences, student residences. So we hope that will be open in January. That's the predicted time frame now. We also have a very small project going on at the corner of Stevens and Washington, sort of across from the chapel. There was a home there that was given to the college, and we are doing some small-scale renovations there to turn that into our new Office of Religious and Spiritual Life. We think that will be a little more welcoming environment than the chapel for many of our students. The idea is to create a space for a meeting, a little office space, a space for meditation, where students will feel comfortable gathering. I was just talking to the chaplain, our new chaplain, Kristen Largent, about this yesterday. She's very excited about the potential of this.
I was going to say, she spoke at Convocation. I think that may have been her first introduction to the broad community, but she certainly seems to be very energetic.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think students will really connect with her.
Anything else about the construction, Jamie?
I think it's really exciting. All this new construction. I know, as a senior, I won't get to enjoy the new Cub, but I've seen the renderings. I'm very excited, and I know that students for years and years to come will be able to enjoy these brand new, amazing facilities.
Yeah. And even the temporary bullet hole, I think, is getting some pretty rave reviews thus far.
I'm glad to hear it.
We put a tweet out about it. We wrote an article and put a tweet up, and professors were retweeting how much they were enjoying it. And, so anyway, I think there's some real good things on the horizon.
Absolutely.
Glad to hear it. And all of these things, I think, will improve the quality of the student experience here. I mean, that's what they're all designed to do. Yeah.
So shifting gears again, we wanted to talk a little bit about the unauthorized recording policy.
Oh, yes. I saw an editorial about that.
Yeah. So the Gettysburgian editorial board put out an editorial condemning the policy. We think that the impetus behind the policy, we understand why such a policy need to exist, mm-hmm. but what we are protesting is the scope of the policy as it's written right now. It's just a little bit too far-reaching, in our opinion. So we just wanted to get you to weigh in on that, whether you were involved in the creation and what you think the next step should be.
I think you raised some interesting issues. I think the intention of that policy was absolutely right. That is, students deserve the right to privacy, and they shouldn't be worrying about whether or not someone's recording them unobtrusively and then going to share that. So to be able to have frank conversations in classrooms or in residence halls, for instance, it would be hard to do, I suppose, if you're always worrying, is somebody going to record what I'm saying, when I'm not aware of it. So I think the intention was very good. This was developed by the Student Life Council. I think maybe you had the impression it was done sort of, covertly. I think they consulted with a lot of people, at least that's their normal process. Student Life Committee, Student Life Committee is composed of students, faculty and administrators. So it's a group of people that I think thought a lot about this, and we're trying to represent the interests of the community. Part of the policy is basically to follow Pennsylvania state law, by the way. I don't think there's any interest in the college becoming the recording police. That was certainly not the intention, that we're out to get anybody with a recording device. I think the intent was to offer students an avenue so if they were the, quote, victims of such a circumstance, there was something they could do. They could report that someone had done this to them, and there would be an action then that the college could take. They could investigate and see if an action was something that should be followed through on. But I don't think there was any interest in disallowing, you know, any photography, any recording of any conversation in various public arenas and so on. So I would encourage you to talk to members of the Student Life Council about this. It may be that what they need is a clause or a little tweaking of the language to better clarify the intentions of this and how it would play out, because certainly they weren't trying to inhibit what most of us would consider to be sort of normal, ongoing business.
Yeah, you know, it's just interesting because the way that they define, you know, where reasonable expectation to privacy exists, it pretty much is almost, it's basically any building inside. You know, Ron Wiaffe, the Director of Student Rights and Responsibility, said that basically anywhere that is exposed to the weather would be a public space. Mm. And so, but, you know, I feel personally when I'm sitting in the library, I don't feel like I'm in a private space. Right. That's a very public space.
Right.
So I wouldn't personally have a reasonable expectation of privacy. So I'm wondering if maybe we could better define that.
I think that would be a great question to take to the Student Life Council. Absolutely. I'm sure they'd be very interested and willing to talk about this and offer some clarifications.
Well, I think we're probably getting close to running out of time. Thank you to President Janet Morgan Riggs for coming on Target, our new Gettysburgian podcast, and look forward to having you back in the future.
Thanks very much, both of you. I enjoyed doing it and happy to come back.
That's On Target for this week. Next time on Target, Professor Michael Berkner will join us to discuss the ongoing Confederate monument controversy, as well as his time as a professor and a student, including his tenure as editor of the Gettysburgian.
We'd like to thank President Janet Morgan Riggs for being our first guest this week, and we'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian for their hard work getting our first issue together, as well as the executive board of WZBT for their support of this project. Be sure to find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and give us a 5-star rating.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha of the class of 2019, who's a music major with a composition concentration from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.